From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this segment is made back in January when a state assembly seat, the 134th State Assembly District, became open. Bill Rylick, a Republican, stepped down from that seat to become the Greece Town Supervisor, and Governor Andrew Cuomo decided not to call a special election. There are a handful of vacancies in the state assembly that the governor said will fill them in November with the general election, and in just a few weeks, we will do just that. We had Democrat Gary Putup on the program last month. He spent nearly 30 years in law enforcement, and this is one of those rare races with two retired members of the law enforcement community running against each other. Gary, the Democrat, Peter Lawrence, a Republican, and Peter spent just about almost 30 years in the state police, if I've got all the numbers right, and from 2002 through 2009 as the U.S. Marshal for the Western District of New York. And now, he is going to explain why he wants to come out of retirement and get into state government. So, Peter Lawrence, thank you for being here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start right there. You're someone who spent 30, almost 40 years in law enforcement, and you had, I would assume, a happy retirement going. What made you want to get into state government, of all things?
Evan, I spent 29 years with the state police, mm-hmm. almost 8 years with the Marshal Service. I've had some wonderful experiences. It's been a great career. To be truthful with you, when I was growing up in central New York, small town, 5,000 people, Little Falls, New York, I never thought that I would have done in the state police or in the Marshal Service what I did. Fortunately for me, that happened. I was very lucky. The community has been good to me. The state's been good to me. All my career, all my life, all my adult life, I've always given back in one respect or another. While I was a uniformed trooper, I volunteered as an assistant coach for the Brockport wrestling team for Don Murray. I've done a volunteer golf tournament for ALS, raised about $1.8 million. I served on the board of the New York State Police Olympics, even though we had to change that name because it was patented by the International Olympic Committee. I've always done something other than work. I've always given back a little bit, and I feel that that's important. When I retired, I thought I was ready to retire. I wanted to travel the East Coast. I wanted to visit battlefields. I wanted to see what the Civil War was about, what the Revolutionary War was about, but it wasn't fulfilling. I still needed to do something else. When this position became available, I said, you know what? I think this is a good fit for me. I think this is something that I can do, and I can do well, and I can represent the constituents of my district in an outstanding manner.
And you and I talked before we got on the air about the fact that for you, you don't need this job. And if you are dissatisfied with it, okay, right? I mean, well, you are certainly not a career politician.
Well, no, absolutely not, Evan. And that conversation, if I can repeat what you were saying ad hoc, so to speak, you were talking about your father, not what an upright individual he was. And, you know, he indicated that if you were going to get into this field, that you either got stood up for your values and belief and got voted out, or else you got beaten down and became part of the sheep, so to speak.
Now, so that's what my dad always said about entering politics.
Well, I'm almost 65 years old. I don't need this. I'm doing this because I want to do it, because I want to serve the community. I can go down there. I can say what I want to say. I can do what I want to do. I can represent the constituents of the 134th District the way that I think they want to be represented. And if I'm wrong, if I make a mistake, they're going to let me know at the voting booth.
And so be it.
And so be it.
Yeah. And I think when we spoke to your opponent Gary Putup, he sort of feels the same way.
I'm sure he does. Yeah.
You know, both of you have had long careers in law enforcement, and this is such an interesting race because you don't often see people in your position, people who don't need the job, people who want to serve, people who had long careers in law enforcement, and people who disagree on certain large and important state issues. So let me start with some places where there may be some disagreement, and there's been a lot of talk in the district about the SAFE Act, for example. Mm-hmm. Let me start by asking you, as a retired not only police officer but U.S. Marshal, the issue of firearms in general, is there any part of the SAFE Act Not the whole thing, but is there any component of it that you would want to keep?
Is there any component I would want to keep? Background checks are very important. I certainly would agree to keeping that. As I'm thinking off the top of my head, I'm not really sure there's too much more that I can agree with. I think there are issues in there such as mental health issues that need to be discussed, probably addressed. However, it wasn't done the right way. When you're making those decisions, when you're going to curtail somebody's rights, constitutional rights, you need to get as much information as you can. The mental health in this industry, the professionals weren't consulting on this. There's a lot of mental health professionals that say this is not the way to address that particular issues. So in answer to your question, there's not an awful lot that I like about the bill.
In your career, as say even as a U.S. Marshal, how often were firearms a concern, an issue in cases, et cetera?
Well, I want to make a specific point here.
Okay.
Firearms, a lot. But they were illegal firearms. When you speak about legal firearms, legally possessed by law-abiding citizens, no issue. Illegal firearms, all day long, every day.
All the time, yeah.
All the time.
Okay. And so what I want to do is I want to play a couple of short clips here on what Gary Putup said about certain parts of it, and we'll see if Peter Lawrence agrees or disagrees.
Okay.
And the first is on assault rifles. This is Democrat Gary Putup talking about, you know, his thoughts on assault rifles versus different kinds of firearms, and let's listen.
My .223 Remington is designed to put one hole in another at 100 yards. You know, very precise bullseye shooting, and it's very good at that. I wouldn't issue that to the military. However, an assault rifle is very good at killing a large number of people in the shortest time possible. Today's New York Times, there was an article just came out, and FBI confirms a sharp rise in the mass shooting since the year 2000, when assault rifle sales really went up. One of the important findings in this article, this study that the FBI did, is the short time, the mass shootings, that the number of victims has gone up in shorter periods of time. Why? The use of assault rifles in these mass shootings.
That's Gary Putup. What do you think, Peter?
Well, you know, again, I don't have those words in front of me, so I can't be verbatim, but he said that the assault rifle or the .223 was very accurate, was very good at putting a hole in a target at 100 yards, let's say. I would say this. I would say that the firearm doesn't put the hole in the target. It's only as accurate as the person who's holding that firearm. And if you're new to it, if you don't know how to use it, it's you can shoot as many rounds as you want, you're not going to hit the target. But if you're proficient with that firearm, you're going to hit the target every time. And that's one thing I think that, especially with this bill, with the ban on firearms, with the features and so forth and so on, the governor did not take into consideration. And as far as the New York Times article that he's referring to, the mass shootings that he's referring to involved active shooting incidents, which is completely different than mass killing in regards to what the FBI reports. The New York Times included active shooting incidents in regards to that study.
Explain the difference.
Active shooting incidents is sound trivial, but I mean, this is how one side creates their argument against the other side. Active shooting incident is three or fewer victims. Four or more is considered mass. But the New York Times decided that they would include both categories, which really isn't fair when you're talking about something as a safe act.
Okay, and Gary also said that a so-called assault rifle is designed to hit as many people as possible in a short amount of time. Yes or no?
Well, no. The AR-15 is not designed to shoot any people. Period. I mean, that's not the purpose of the AR-15. The purpose of the AR-15 is whether you're hunting or target practice or whatever. The only the only thing that makes a firearm a weapon is the person using it. That's it. The Virginia Tech massacre down there. The kid used two hand, semi-automatic handguns. He reloaded 17 times. It's not the firearm. It's the person in possession of the firearm.
I pointed out to Gary that most of the killings with firearms in this country are not with so-called assault rifles. The vast majority.
That's correct.
But his response is that I hear from a lot of people. And in a minute, I'd love for you to talk about what you're hearing from voters on this. But when it comes to assault rifles, they are a small amount of the annual firearm deaths, but they are often used in mass shooting events, are they not?
Well, when you say often, I'm not going to quibble over that term. Have they been used in mass shooting events? Absolutely. There's no question about it. But remember this. In FBI statistics, 2011, the latest statistics before the SAFE Act was passed, of something like almost 400 homicides by firearms, 5 were by long guns. Long guns, now that could be a 22. Doesn't have to be an AR-15. 5. So what are you saying about AR-15s? If they're such a problem, why don't we see it in any of the studies that are coming up? I don't understand.
We're talking to Peter Lawrence, running for the Assembly in the 134th Assembly District. And as we talk about the SAFE Act, what are you hearing when you talk to voters in this district? What are people saying about the... You smiled a little bit there. Are you choosing your words carefully?
No. I've knocked on a lot of doors, Evan. That's how I've chosen to run my campaign. I think it's best if I sit down and I speak with people face to face, knock on their doors. If I have an opportunity to show myself, to see so that people can see what I look like, hear what I sound like, that I can connect with them better. There's three things that I'm hearing on the campaign trail. Number one, and this is number one, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, is total dissatisfaction with President Obama. Everybody is upset about President Obama. Number two is the SAFE Act. I would say 20 to 1, a minimum, 25 to 1, 100 to 1. In fact, now that I'm thinking of it, I've knocked on well over 1,000 doors, maybe 2,000 doors. I've had one person that was in favor of the SAFE Act. Wait a minute, Evan. I'm telling you, you asked me and I'm telling you, please.
Okay, absolutely.
Please.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and the third thing that I'm hearing is resistance towards the Common Core. And those are all three things that I'm against as well. Now, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm only saying that polling indicates that the SAFE Act is not nearly so unpopular. And it certainly is with some people, but you're saying, in your experience, it is much more unpopular than maybe the polls are suggesting.
Well, obviously the poll is statewide. It takes into consideration New York City. It takes into consideration Long Island. Nothing's been done upstate as far as a very specific poll. I am knocking on doors in the 134th District. I am listening to what they're saying, and I am telling you the SAFE Act is very, very unpopular.
You also understand firearms much better than I do and than most of our listening audience. So let me ask you another question. Right. I've heard from people who have so-called assault rifles, and they told me the SAFE Act is poorly designed in that it is easy to circumvent it by a simple modification, and therefore it becomes functionally the same, but it is now compliant. Is that right or wrong?
That's correct. When you say that, I'm much more familiar with firearms than...
Based on your background.
Well, based on my background, but I'll be truth with you. I'm not a... I do own firearms. I've got long rifles as well as handguns. I don't carry. When I was the U.S. Marshal, I almost never carried, even though a firearm was issued to me and I had to qualify, so forth and so on. So, but you're absolutely right when you're talking about the function of the AR-15. His name is James Jacobs. He's a law professor at NYU who studies this issue almost exclusively. And he said that the new compliant AR-15 looks different than the prohibited one, but functionally it's the same. So what have we accomplished?
I think that's probably a fair question on this, and the next time Governor Cuomo comes on this program, we'll ask about that, because they would tell you that they think functionally it is different.
I would probably disagree with him, because I think his familiarity with firearms is not as good as someone who studies them. And I would take Professor Jacobs' word probably before I would take Governor Cuomo's word.
Okay.
I mean, he studies the issue, he studies the weapon, he expressed his opinion, not on one side, whether not as a Republican or as a Democrat, but as somebody who's an academic.
So you would vote to repeal the entire SAFE Act?
Like I say, there are things in there. Do we need to do something in regards to firearms, in regards to who gets them, so forth and so on? Yes, we do. However, in the initial instance, yes, I would vote to repeal this.
Is there any kind of a firearm that people should not be able to own?
Machine gun, grenade launcher.
Okay, a rocket-fired missile.
Yeah.
But if that's the point, then you do agree with some kind of gun control. We're just sort of haggling over where the line is, right?
Well, but I think where the line is. We're talking about a constitutional right. Whether you agree with it or not, it's a constitutional right for every United States citizen. They have the right to possess a firearm.
Yes.
If you want to take that right away or restrict it, you should have to justify, rationalize it. Tell me why you want to take those rights away. And if you can't do it, then don't do it.
Yeah, I understand. I certainly understand that point. But help me understand the difference between machine gun and these so-called assault rifles.
Well, first off, my answer to that is going to be this. The United States Supreme Court, I think it was back in 1934, said that states could reasonably restrict a person's right to a firearm. They're the ones that said you can't have a machine gun.
But do you agree with it?
Yeah, I agree with it.
Okay, so you don't want people to own machine guns, but so what's the difference again? And I'm not saying there's no difference. I'd like to hear you articulate the difference in terms of why people should be allowed to own a so-called assault rifle and not a machine gun.
I haven't given it much thought, but to be truthful with you, I don't see why any person would need a machine gun for whatever reason.
What if they say hunting or target practice?
I don't agree with that. Target practice, nobody's going to accurately shoot a machine gun. I mean, you're going to shoot it as accurately as a machine gun can be shot, but
sporting.
What sport?
Hunting
a deer with a machine gun, I don't see much sport in it. I think there's a huge opportunity there for somebody to, for instance, lose control, to hit. And again, this is going to be a wrong phrase, but it's a phrase that probably, well, I'm going to use it. Collateral damage. It opens up a shooting incident to collateral damage. We had an incident not too long ago down south at a firing range where I think it was a nine-year-old girl was being showed how to shoot a machine gun. She lost control of it and killed the instructor.
Horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Absolutely tragic situation there.
But a machine gun, I think you're going to the extreme on that, Evan. I really do.
Okay.
I really do.
Well, and you also brought up another important point, which is mental health.
Yes.
In your law enforcement career, I had to have seen many, many cases where there were issues regarding people with firearms and mental health. And the one thing, Peter, that I have not heard explained adequately, and look, this is a hard problem, mental health and firearms. Mm. But have you gotten a sense for what could actually be done to, if we're going to focus on mental health, what can be done to improve the chances of making sure people with mental health problems don't possess
weapons? That's a tough question to answer, Evan. I mean, obviously, if you're involuntarily committed, that's easy. You can say that person shouldn't own a firearm. But when a person realizes that he has some mental issues, you know, he's not dealing with life the way that he's supposed to, and he's going to seek help, just arbitrarily say that person's right to own a firearm should be taken away, I don't think it's right. I think there has to be some due process in there. And I think to address this issue, and it is an issue, because if you look at our mass shootings, for every one of them involved an individual with mental illness. I think if we're going to do something about it, we need to call experts in and say, hey, listen, you know, look at all these situations. All these people have had mental issues. What can we do as a society, as a government who's supposed to protect and safeguard our society? What can we do to address this issue? But to think that you can do it in the governor's office? I mean, that's where my problem is. I mean, let me give you for example. The day the SAFE Act was passed, AR-15s, the minute it was signed by the governor, AR-15s were illegal. It wasn't until 60 days later that the enhancements of the crimes became eligible. It wasn't until 60 days later that the mental hygiene issues became. Why? If the problem is to protect us, and we know that one of the biggest issues in this situation is mental health, why would we wait 60 days? Now are we telling that mentally disturbed person, hey, listen, if you want to do this, you better do it quick because you've only got 60 days left. Is that what we're telling people?
You're saying prioritize it. So if you're elected...
Well, I'm not saying prioritize, but I think basically what I'm saying was the bill was a political bill. The Governor Cuomo wanted to get headlines, and he got headlines. Although, I don't think he got the headlines he wanted.
If you're elected to the state assembly, then you would like to see the state bring in experts to help lead a conversation about mental
health.
How
else would you do it and do it rationally? The governor knows the situation with mental health people, with individuals that need assistance with their everyday life. I mean, he's an expert on this. Why would you think as an assembly person that you know more than a psychiatrist or a mental health provider? Why would you think you know more? I don't understand. Explain to me.
Well, I'm sure that conversation will continue at the state level. Well, perhaps it will. Perhaps it won't.
I hope so.
Talking to Peter Lawrence, who's running for assembly. You also mentioned Common Core, that you're hearing from people all the time on Common Core.
Big time.
Unhappy with it, but
very much
it's
so.
Also a fair question to ask, what is the state's role and what would you like to see the state do? What would you do as a member of the assembly?
I think we need to take a look at our education system as a whole. You know, obviously Common Core, I mean, we were just talking about mental issues. I spoke, and I'm not going to mention her last name, but I spoke with a mother just 2 days ago. I think it was 2 days. No, it was Saturday. And it was out in Spencerport, and she said, Common Core is making my daughter sick. I've had to send her to a psychiatrist. Just because of the pressure that's on. The Common Core is another thing that was implemented without any real thought about it. It was like, you know, Governor Cuomo saying, well, okay, give me the $700 million that I've got for instituting this and everything is going to be fine. Well, it's not. It's not. Not everything comes down to dollars and cents. Again, Common Core should have been instituted with input from the faculty, with input from parents, from input from the administration, and maybe even input from the students. But we just said, hey, listen, this is what we're going to do. And we shoved it down their throats, and people are not happy.
So get it essentially pushed aside as quickly as possible?
But Common Core is not, it's not the only thing that we should be looking at as far as our education system goes. I mean, not everybody is meant for college. Some people would like to go into the trades. Why aren't we taking a closer look at that? Maybe this is something that we can include unions and say, okay, listen, we want to design a program where once students reach a certain level of education in regards to academics, math, science, English, and so forth, maybe there's another route that they can take. Is there something that we can do to design, maybe a machinist, maybe a carpenter, maybe a mason, and continue that right through community colleges? We can't just say one size fits all. It doesn't.
So when it comes to, you've talked in this campaign about wanting lower taxes, wanting to improve the chances of getting hired. I mean, I think that's the direction we're going in this conversation about education. But now you're starting to be specific about what we can actually do or what the state can do here. What else in specific, when we talk about cutting taxes, we talk about mandates, let's get specific about what you want to see done as a member of state government.
All right. First of all, I have to take an issue with a little bit about what you said.
Okay.
You indicated that I started talking about what I think the state should do. One of the biggest things I think the state should do is get out of the way. I mean, what's important, what feels like should be done down in New York City is different than up here. Let the locals, let the people of the 134th District decide what they think is important in regards to the to their children's education. The state should simply, you know, Ronald Reagan said it best.
I was going to say,
government is not the solution, it's the problem.
Your comments were reminding me of Reagan's comments there. Okay, so number one, you're saying the government is too involved. Get out of the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's too involved. I mean, they're telling us we have to keep our school taxes within a certain rate. Look what happened in Irondequoit. I think it was Westmont, Irondequoit. I'm not sure. They couldn't get the budget passed.
They're talking about.
I mean, who knows better for West Irondequoit what their system needs than West Irondequoit? Governor Cuomo, sitting 225 miles away, saying, "Hey, listen, you can't do this." Evan, you have to remember, a lot of this stuff, unfortunately, comes down to money. When the New York State Lottery was first approved, it was a referendum. This is back in the 60s, I think, the early 60s, the late 60s. All the money raised from the lottery was supposed to go to education. And what happened? All these millions and millions of dollars started to flow in, and government couldn't keep their hands off of it. Now, once the referendum got passed, they decided, you know what? We're going to put this money in the general fund. We'll still pay in that education, but we're going to put it in the... Do you think all that money went to education? That's what the people voted on. That's not what they got.
What kind of tax cuts? What kind of tax cuts do you want to see?
Well, I want to see tax cuts across the board. I want to see property tax cuts, school tax cuts. I want to see business tax cuts. I want to see income tax cuts. I don't understand.
I know the question you're saying to say. I don't understand the question. You want all kinds of tax cuts.
Absolutely.
Okay. But there has to be some kind of structural decisions on how to pay for it. The state has to spend less.
You're saying the state should
spend less.
You answered your question.
Okay. So, but exactly where? Give me some examples on where the state can spend less so we can see these tax burdens reduced.
Well, for one thing, it's not so much where a state can spend less. Let's say where they can spend it better and where they can stop abuse and fraud. I mean, we've got people that aren't... I myself, as a troop commander in Troop E, took a look at the people we had on Workman's Comp. And I'm not going to mention anybody's name. I identified them, came in, made them go through a division physical. You know what? There was nothing wrong with them. And that's happening all over the state. Let's take a look at some of those people. And you know what? To make a point, to make sure that doesn't happen in the future, let's arrest those people. Not simply send them back to work or say, you know what? You've got to pay back some money. If they're participating in fraud, let's arrest them. And if we do that, we're going to have less problems.
Incarcerate them?
If we have to. What's wrong with incarceration?
Well, that costs money.
It does, but we've got empty cells. We can do it.
Okay, so you want to see us get much tougher on what you see as the fraudulent
waste. Waste.
The waste.
Waste.
Which comes with workers' comp fraud.
Well, that's just one thing that I use for an example.
Okay.
I mean, we've got two years of unemployment. Now, does anybody really believe that 2 years of unemployment incentivizes somebody to go out and find a job? I don't. I don't think it does.
So cut unemployment benefits.
Evan, we're talking about a myriad of things here. I'm not... just pinpointing this one
thing. I certainly understand.
Under Clinton, we had welfare to work. It worked. Our welfare rolls went down. Now our welfare rolls have gone up. We're spending tons of money on food stamps.
So in other words, the safety net is incentivizing people not to work.
Some people, not all. There's people out there who genuinely need help. And you know what? If some guy is defrauding us out of $10,000 a year, I'd rather see that $10,000 be spent on somebody who genuinely needs it. That's what I think bothers people such as myself. And a lot of the people that I know out in the 134th District, they're hardworking people. They're not looking for a handout. They go to work every day. But you know what? They're working in a lot of instances where somebody else is taking money out of their pocket. And I don't think they're happy about that. And is that one thing that I think can be addressed? Absolutely. Is it the only thing? No, I don't think it's the only thing.
Are there other places that the state is spending money that you see that and you say, you should not be spending that money? We can stop that spending right away. That can help pay for a lower tax burden.
Well, I'm not sure I can come up with something, you know, off the top of my head. I know, for instance, you talk about taxes. There's money that's taxed. What people are taxed in regards to a highway tax, for instance. No. Let me back up a little bit. Let's talk about the thruway. The funds for the thruway, the tolls. And we see constantly where the tolls are rising, yet we don't know why. Is the thruway? I mean, that was supposed to be free after a few years.
It was supposed to be free by 1996, I think.
Cuomo did a little, not Andrew, his father, Mario did a little thing where he ran into money, he needed money, so he sold the canal system to the New York State Thruway Authority. I mean, it's a gimmick.
11 cents on the dollar goes to the canals.
It's a gimmick to get more money. And if tell me the sense of it.
But the Thruway Authority will tell you that they've got one of the best maintained, best quality safety roads out there, and that a lot of the people who are paying for it are the people who are using it, but they may not even be state residents. And that if you took the authority and you cut out tolls, all of a sudden state taxpayers would be paying the bulk of it.
If you took a look at their budget, where they spent the money, how they spent the money, do you think as a fiscal officer, you could streamline that a little bit? I'll bet I could.
Cut out the canal, for example?
I don't know if they legally could be able to do that, but again, like I say, it was a gimmick to raise more money.
We're talking to Peter Lawrence. He is running for the State Assembly in the 134th District, and very interesting race. He is spent 29 years in the state police and nearly 8 years as the U.S. Marshal for the Western District of New York starting in 2002. And he is running against a Democrat who also spent nearly four decades in law enforcement. That's Gary Putup, who was on the program last month. So you're getting a sense of some of the differences that they have on some of these issues. Now, in some of these state races, we see candidates get together. Do you have any plans to debate Mr. Putup?
I haven't given it any thought at this point, no.
Not something that's a priority or something that you want to do?
No, it's certainly not a priority, no.
Okay. Do you have an expectation for the outcome of the race now? I mean,
well, everybody has an expectation. I'm sure I expect to win, and I'm sure my opponent expects he's going to win.
It's very interesting. Peter comes in here today, and I remarked to him before the show, I said, you're the first would-be politician with no entourage that I've ever seen.
And what was my reply, Evan?
I think you said something like, why would I need an entourage?
Oh, I think I said, that's me.
Yeah, right.
That's me. I don't travel in an entourage. I never have.
But do you get the sense that are you ready for the state job that may have some of these sort of accoutrements that you're not a big fan of, or et cetera? I mean, I'm still trying to make sure I fully grasp why someone like you wants this job.
I want it for a lot of different reasons. I want it because I want to give back. I want it because I have a sense of community. The community has been very good to me. I did 29 wonderful years with the state police. I did 8 years with the Marshal Service. It's put me in a position now where I can do something like this, and I can dedicate 24 hours a day if I need to. And I don't have to worry about anything else. If the people don't like me, they'll throw me out. And I can live with that. But I think that right now in this particular place, I think my values align with the people of the 134th District. I'm against President Obama. I'm against the SAFE Act. And I'm against Common Core. And those are the things that I'm hearing. And you know what? If I go to Albany, and I do what the people expect me to do, I won't have to worry about anybody else. I won't have to worry about the speaker. I won't have to worry about the governor. I won't have to worry about anybody. I'll have to worry about my constituents.
Peter, when it comes to an issue that's been big in this community lately, it's parole and the question. We saw a police officer killed.
Yes, we did.
And it was a community, I mean, frankly, when that happens, it's a national tragedy, but a huge, huge tragedy here. And instantly we had conversations about what works and what doesn't and what should change on different levels of government. Should we incarcerate people for longer? Should we be more? Joe Robach talked about making sure that full sentences are served and being very careful about letting certain people out. Is that practical? In your career in law enforcement, what would you want to apply to this kind of a question?
Well, I would agree with Senator Robach. We need more definite sentences. We have some people that are out there talking about alternatives to incarceration. That certainly would not have helped with our police officer that was so viciously murdered, or the young girl that was so viciously raped not too long ago. Both of those individuals were out on parole. I think what we need as a society is we have to. The traditional American family has fallen apart. We don't have that anymore. We have values and morals that we grow up with. When I say we, I'm talking about myself. I'm 65 years old. I'll be 65 years old. Those things have to be reestablished before we can turn our society around. Stop and think about it, Evan. We're in the process of legalizing drugs that for years and years and years have been criminalized. We're talking about Congressman Chavez, I think he's from Texas, I'm not sure, but he says that the Border Patrol has stopped terrorists from coming into this country. But yet we have an open border, illegals, possibly terrorists can come in, and in the meanwhile we're telling our citizens they can't own firearms. I wonder if the terrorists are going to say, well, you know what? We can't go to New York. They've got that Safe Act up there. We can only put 7 rounds in our magazine. Something tells me they're not saying that. But yet we're telling our citizens, law-abiding citizens that have never done anything wrong, you can't have that. I mean, is this upside down?
Well, a judge threw out the ammunition limit is way too arbitrary.
Judge Scrutiny, the chief judge out in Western New York, a friend of mine, he threw it out. That's Western New York. That's not Northern. That's not Southern. That's not Eastern. That's Western New York.
Now, your opponent agrees with you on this one. He told me that magazine limit is just too arbitrary. Didn't make any sense.
Well, okay. Go ahead.
I'm just pointing out there are places.
I don't want a tit for tat type thing, but go ahead.
No, yes. There are places where you agree, and I think in that one, exactly what the judge said is what we've heard from a lot of people, which is that 7 rounds is sort of arbitrary, et cetera. So,
the Virginia Tech shooter changed this clip 17 times. 17 times. So you tell me how many rounds an individual in his house should have. Should he have 10? There's handguns out there right now that can carry 17 rounds. If he's got that on his dresser and somebody comes into his house and he shoots 16 times, is he going to get arrested?
Talking to Peter Lawrence, running for Assembly. Now, I have some people who want to join the conversation. I did the same thing with Gary Puttup. I said, let's just always keep it civil and curt, and we'll start with John in Rochester. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Peter.
Yes, John.
I have my business downtown, but I live in 134th. And I'll tell you, I think I've got some ideas for you, and I'd like to get your comments on this, on making financial situation in this state better. Number one, present competition to the public school system via private schools. Work to get vouchers universally, not only statewide, but nationwide. Obviously, you're running for state office, but I would try to make universal vouchers apply in New York State. So that will encourage private competition to these failing public schools. And number two, renegotiate these unbelievable perks that a lot of the public employee union contracts have. As an example, health care and pension reimbursement to public employees on an average are like 60 to 70% higher than they are in comparable jobs in the private sector. These are the things that I think could be done. Demand renegotiation, and if they don't renegotiate in good faith, then start layoffs. That's two solutions. What are your thoughts?
Thanks, John. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, John, you kind of you're putting me on the spot, obviously, but that's good. Vouchers, you can't argue with that. You can't argue with issuing vouchers for charter schools. The one thing I would say is that there has to be a standard, and every standard that a public school has to meet should be enforced as well as the charter school. That's one thing that I think we've got to keep a level playing field. So I think that if everything being equal, yes, let's issue vouchers. Number two, in regards to public employees, John, that comes back to our government. That comes back to our representatives. The way these contracts are set up, once you get to a position where there's no movement on the contract, it goes to binding arbitration. And let's face it, the governor, the people who do arbitrate these contracts want to get called back. So they have to make sure that somehow they keep everybody happy. So there's nobody in there negotiating for the citizens. As a citizen in the 134th district, John, nobody is negotiating for you. The governor is there, the government is there, but they're pandering to the public employees union. The arbitrator is there, but he wants to get paid. He wants to come in on the next contract negotiation. So he's going to make sure that nobody is really angry. So that system has to be changed. And as far as renegotiate, I'm not sure you can just cancel a contract and renegotiate, but there are things, like I said, there are things that can be done, and I really can't disagree with you.
This is Mary Ellen. Mary Ellen, thanks for waiting. You're on with Peter Lawrence. Go ahead.
Yes, Peter, I have one question. What is your position on hydrofracking in New York State?
You know, that's a good question, Mary Ellen, and you hit me
it
hard.
Is.
Yeah,
very
it is. You hit me hard. As I mentioned a woman that I was talking to last Saturday about her daughter. I'm going to mention her first name, but I'm not going to mention her last name. Her name was Leslie. Maybe she's listening. But that's one of the things she asked me. So, you know, I try to be as honest as I can when people ask me a question. And my answer to her, and it's going to be a little bit long, Mary Ellen, but hopefully you'll stand on and you'll understand what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of knowledge on hydrofracking, obviously. And there's a lot of people out there that don't. If I had to vote on the situation, if it was going to come up, what I would want to do is this. There are anti-fracking groups and pro-fracking groups, and both of these groups will take you as a representative or anybody else. They'll take you to different sites and show you what's going on in regards to where they're coming from. You know, Pennsylvania hydrofracks, Ohio fracks. I would take one of each.
Right.
I would listen to both. I would see where the anti-fracking people are coming from and where the pro-fracking people are coming from. I would then sit down and discuss with the representatives of, and this really doesn't affect us. It affects the Marcellus Shale area, you know, the southern tier. I would speak with the leaders, the representatives of the southern tier, and see how they feel about it. And then based on that information, I would vote. Now, you have to understand that one of the things we're talking about is anywhere from between 20 to 100,000 jobs, well-paying jobs, would be created in the state. That's something that has to be taken into consideration. Now, you're asking me, and I'm gonna opt out a little bit here, and I'm gonna justify it this way, but based on a little bit that I know, I would probably vote for fracking. But that would be in deference to the people in the southern tier. But however, understand this. Governor Cuomo has been studying fracking for years and still cannot make up his mind. I think I should have at least the same information that he's got in order to make that same decision, pro or con.
Peter, thank you. And Mary Ellen, thanks for the call. Let's get Tim in Pittsford. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. Peter, you sound like a nice guy. You really do. But, I mean, I can call up Evan and say, I want to cut taxes all across the board. And he can say, great. And I can then just go on to the next thing without any, just a generality. Or I can say, well, I'm against Cuomo and the SAFE Act and Obama. And that's great, and I can kind of skirt the hydrofracking issue, even though it's been around for years, and us as citizens have really kind of researched it because it does affect us, especially in the Finger Lakes region too. And again, I mean, I want someone that wants this job, that needs the job, that's hungry for the job. I don't want someone who says, well, I don't really need the job, and you know what, if I don't do a good job or whatever, then I'm going to get voted out. You know what I mean? I can do that. I can go to my job every day and then say, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll give this a shot or something like that. It's just there's no concrete ideas I hear coming from you. Again, I'm sure you're a nice guy, but there's no concrete ideas. And I want someone who's hungry for this and not someone who's just going to say, well, if I lose, I lose. On to the next thing.
Tim, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Peter.
Tim, you sure it was Tim, not Tim. John? Tim, first of all, if you're going to vote somebody in who needs the job, then he's going to do what he has to keep that job, whether it's to stand up for what he believes in or stand up for what somebody else believes in. If he needs it, he's going to prostitute himself and do what he has to do to keep that job. I can go down there. I can say what I believe. I can vote on my values. I can vote on my morals. And then I can go back to the people that voted for me, and I can say, this is what I said I was going to do, and this is what I did. And if that doesn't satisfy those people, they're going to go to somebody else.
Pat, thanks for calling. Pat, we got to keep it moving. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, Peter. Here's my question for you. Over half the voters in the district are women. What specifically have you done to promote women issues?
Go ahead, Peter.
Well, Pat, to be truthful with you, I've never been in a position where I could do anything for women's issues. This is one of the things that I'm running for, and one of the things that I hope to be able to contribute to. I've been retired for several years, but if you're asking about do I believe in women's rights, absolutely. Do I believe that a woman should be paid as much as a man? Absolutely, there's no question about it. I mean, women make up over 50% of our population. So.
Where do you come on pro-choice, pro-life, those questions that have been in state government when it comes to the women's equality agenda, Peter?
Well, I have to be truthful with you. As a Christian, I am pro-life. However, I do recognize that abortion is the law of the land, and women are entitled, women have that right. And that's the way it is.
Would you vote to change that?
Would I vote to change that? I don't think that we could ever change it in this society. There may be tweaks that people want to do, such as partial birth abortion. I don't believe in partial birth abortion. To me, that's infanticide. It's murder.
So. Let me keep it going here with Herman. Go ahead, Herman. We only got a couple minutes left. Go ahead.
Okay. I have one correction and one question. My correction is, earlier you were making a point about a lot of shootings being committed by mentally ill people. Well, I don't know if you know this, but very, very few, tiny percentage of mentally ill people commit violence, and very few people are shot by mentally ill people. And if you didn't know that, shouldn't you know it? And if you did know it, doesn't that make the comment a red herring? Now, my question to you is, you were opposed to the long periods of unemployment insurance because, in your mind, it was a disincentive to looking for work. Now, that I think that is based on your gut feeling or your ideology, not based on evidence, but be that as it may, my question to you is, how does cutting... the unemployment insurance, which would equally hurt the many who deserve it and the few who are taking advantage of it and don't deserve it, how would it create a single job at a time when, as has been the case for the last 2 years, there are 4 or 5 applicants for every job?
Thank you, Herman. Go ahead.
Herman, when we were speaking about people with mental health issues, we were speaking about mass shootings. We weren't speaking about shootings overall. If I came across as being somewhat unsympathetic towards individuals suffering from mental health sickness, I apologize. I did not mean that. But we were speaking about mass shootings and mass shootings in general. As far as unemployment insurance, 2 years is a long time. The studies have shown that after about 6 months, people stop looking for work. How are they continuing on unemployment? In September, we created something like 248,000 jobs here in the United States. Our unemployment rate went down to 5.9%. However, 318,000 people dropped out of the job market. So there was actually a net loss. We have to understand that there's approximately 93 million people out of work in this country. But at the same time, we have politicians that are telling us we need amnesty for illegal immigrants because they're willing to do jobs that Americans won't. I don't understand.
Peter, I want to thank you for taking the time to come in. I know you've been out there in the 134th and took the time for us, and our listeners appreciate that. And thank you, sir.
Thank you, Evan, for your time. I appreciate it, and thank everybody out in the audience, and thank you, 134th.
All right, very good. Election Day is coming up. It's 2 weeks away right now, isn't it? Is it 3 weeks away? Oh, my gosh. Peter's correcting me on my math. I was told there'd be no math. Peter Lawrence spent 29 years in state police and then was the U.S. Marshal for the Western District of New York. He's the Republican running for the 134th Assembly District. You heard Gary Putup, the Democrat, last month. You had a chance to hear Peter today to get both sides of it. Have a great day, and we'll see you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.